From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm John Gatto. Carp. The word conjures up a wide variety of reactions, not only among fishermen, but people in general, and specifically cultures around the world. In recent years, carp have been increasingly mentioned among invasive species that are threatening our waterways, and there have been attempts up and down the Mississippi River to help control the most aggressive offenders. But the headlines alone only tell part of the story. So with us to sort out things is Reggie McLeod. He's the publisher of Winona, Minnesota-based Big River Magazine. More importantly, he's been covering the issue for a number of years, reporting on its ups and downs, and along the way working to generate some greater awareness of the issue related to carp. So let's start with the basics. Not all carp are created equal. Help us sort it out.
Well, the common carp has been in this area since the late 1800s. Actually, it moved through Europe because it was such an easy fish to farm in ponds. It was deliberately moved all the way out to England, and it's a very popular fish for anglers in England. Then it was brought deliberately to this country and planted and got established here. So it's been around. It's almost a naturalized citizen, I suppose, but it's still not a good thing for the environment. It kind of takes advantage of environmental degradation. Mm. It can cope with that well, which means it's pretty successful generally. What they call Asian carp now, and they're all Asian carp technically, are new ones that were brought into this country to help with fish farming in the south. They were used to eat plants and pests and so on. And of course, the fish farmers promised that they would never escape. And of course they did, and got into the lower Mississippi. And ever since then, they've been spreading farther up the Mississippi and through the Mississippi watershed. And of course, the big controversy recently has been, how can we keep them out of the Great Lakes? Because that's another huge watershed.
We hear about Asian carp in general, but we hear silver carp. That's just one of a couple of different varieties that are more recent invasives.
Yeah, the Asian carp generally refer to four carp. The ones that we're worried about the most and that are spreading the most aggressively are silver carp, which are the ones that jump, mm-hmm. the famous ones that jump way up in the air, and bighead carp. But there are also black carp and grass carp that are spreading.
And what are we seeing in these here parts? What are we most concerned with?
Well, they've found silver carp and bighead carp in our stretch of the Mississippi as far back as 2008. And they don't find them there every year, but they found them on occasion, and they found them up as far as just below the Twin Cities, getting into the Twin Cities area.
What is it about these non-native invasive carp that threaten the waterways, that threaten aquatic life? Why be concerned?
Well, because they displace native fish, I guess, is the main concern. They're displacing game fish. But not everyone agrees with that, because some people believe that if you have a healthy ecosystem, that it's more difficult for invasives to get established. So some people believe that the reason that these new Asian carp haven't spread to this area in large numbers is because we have a healthier river up here and that it's more difficult. Other people say, no, it's just going to take more time. Mm-hmm. But the place where they're most common, when you see those YouTube videos of the jumping silver carp, that's usually in the lower Illinois River. And that river has been very degraded because there's sewage from the Chicago area that goes into that river. And the ecosystem in that river collapsed in the 1950s and the early 1960s. So perhaps that was an opportunity for the Asian carp to move in because there was an empty niche for them to occupy.
You mentioned that there has been monitoring that's shown some of these invasives back to 2008 here in the upper Mississippi. At what point were they really moving up the river itself? I mean, has this been going on for decades now?
Yeah, it's almost 30 years, close to 30 years since they escaped. So it has been a slow process. And some people would argue that eventually we'll have a lot of them up here and they'll displace the native fish. It's hard to say. They eat a lot of the same things that the young game fish would eat. So if there's more silver carp and bighead carp, there'll be fewer game fish.
What is being done currently to try and curb that expansion either in population or further up the river?
Not much. We've Congress did instruct the Army Corps of Engineers to close the lock at the Upper St. Anthony Falls lock and dam, which is in downtown Minneapolis. And that was done to keep the fish from getting into the Mississippi River above the Twin Cities and to protect that whole watershed from carp. And that's going to be done on June 10th, I believe. It's closed probably right now, and the Corps decided to open it this spring, which a lot of people objected to because the point was to block the carp, and the carp and most fish tend to migrate in the spring. So opening it in the spring, if only for a few months, is probably a pretty bad idea. But after that, that'll be closed, and there'll be a waterfall that's almost 50 feet high. It'll be a pretty good barrier for the fish. But really,
and again, that's designed to keep them from moving into the headwaters and further north.
And there's a lot of big lakes that drain into the Mississippi River, and they could move up into all those lakes.
So, and these invasives have not been found at that point yet.
No, they haven't. They've been found a few miles below there. And they found...
In the Twin Cities.
Yeah, in the Twin Cities. And they found some DNA evidence, but it's pretty unlikely that they're above there now.
What about closer to our neck of the woods then? You said there's really not much being done. What's possible?
I don't know if there's anything possible. People are looking at, they've looked at poisons that might be specific to one fish, but that's very dangerous because there are so many different types of fish and other animals in the water that could be affected by a poison. They've looked at diseases that might hold them in check. They've looked at sound barriers and electrical barriers in the locks and dams, but that may not be very effective because when the river gets to a certain height, the Army Corps of Engineers is required to pull all of the gates up out of the water in the dams and let the water flow freely. So there's no barrier there. So there's a good chance that they could swim right through those dams when the gates are out of the water.
For those who are concerned, professionals who are concerned about the advancement of the Asian carp through the Mississippi and presumably into some of its tributaries, what will they be looking for as far as the negative effect of this happening and over what span of time? I mean, is this the next 10 years, the next 50 years, and what's it going to look like?
I don't think they know, and I think most biologists would tell you as much because you might think that all you need is a male and a female of a certain species to be in a certain place and create a population there. Mm-hmm. And that might be true for Asian carp, and maybe you need dozens to really have a sustainable population. I don't think they really know. They're kind of learning as they go. One thing that we've just discovered, and I'm kind of giving away something that's going to be in the next magazine, but it appears that there are fewer common carp in the river, and people aren't sure what the reason for that is. There's a chance that that could be some kind of disease. It could be something that would affect the other Asian carp as well. If that's the case, it could be, again, that the ecosystem is healthier, and maybe that's discouraging it. I think it was about four summers ago, there was all this weed growth in the river.
Right.
And it drove
right.
people crazy because the backwaters are just clogged with weeds. You couldn't fish. I couldn't get into some backwaters. I almost had to drag my canoe over the weeds. They were so thick. And as inconvenient as that was for us human beings, it was really a big payday for fish, I believe. That provided a lot of cover for young fish, so their survival rate was probably better. There was a lot of food. So that might have been a sign that in some ways the river was getting healthier, and maybe that affected the common carp. But it's a very complex system, and there's a surprising amount of that we don't really understand about it. Yeah.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. We're talking with Reggie McLeod, publisher of Big River Magazine and its online complement, bigrivermagazine.com. And we're talking about carp. So if the biologists and others who are monitoring the situation aren't sure what it's going to look like or how quickly things might change, why the red flags all the time? I mean, why has this become such a big deal?
Well, because people value a healthy ecosystem with the variety and the native fish in it, and they don't have that in the Illinois River. Almost the entire fish mass in sections of the Illinois River are just silver and bighead carp. There are no other fish. There are no other species. And there were some before, so they've displaced them. And so everyone fears that our stretch of the river, other stretches of the river are going to look like that eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, they really might.
One of the things that Big River Magazine has done and others, but in particular, you've kind of led this cause, it seems, to raise awareness, not only of the issue, but of the fact that carp in some cultures and in some parts of the world have usefulness. They're not just nuisance fish. Retrace that for us a little bit. And why did you, as a publisher of a magazine, an extension of your work as a journalist, why did you choose to try and create more awareness?
Well, it's interesting. In a lot of parts of the world, there have some species of fish face extinction. And there were some hugely productive fisheries, like the cod fishery in the North Atlantic, that have been destroyed, not by pollution or environmental degradation, just by overfishing. And there are fish species in the Caribbean and all around the world that are having to be protected because of overfishing. Whereas at the same time, common carp still is a problem, as well as these new species of Asian carp. And they're also the most popular freshwater fish for consumption in the world. There's a tremendous volume of carp eaten in Asia and Africa and Europe. It's extremely important. When I was in high school on the north of Detroit in the suburbs, about half of my friends were the children of people who had left Poland after World War II. So I had a lot of Polish friends and Ukrainian friends and so on. And the Christmas tradition in Poland and much of Germany and even into Ukraine is Christmas dinner, you serve a baked carp. And I had been raised, and my father always told me that carp was inedible. If we were out fishing, we caught a carp, we'd try to give it away, or he'd bring it home and bury it under the rose bushes or something like that. He thought people that ate carp just didn't know any better. Huh. And of course, the people who were eating the carp thought the people who didn't eat the carp didn't know any better. And the numbers really support their side of the argument. So we thought, perhaps at least one way to slow the spread and maybe take care of this problem would be to help make eating carp more popular, to connect people up with this tradition, and maybe we can overfish the carp. And commercial fishermen, there's still a lot of commercial fishermen on the river. There are fewer than there were 20 or 30 years ago. And there were small fish stores in most towns that were often owned by a commercial fisherman. There was one in Winona, Raymer's. Bud Raymer owned that, and he caught the fish, and he was selling pickled carp, like pickled herring, which were really good. And I'd go in and buy them, and he pickled them himself. And I had a party at my home one time, and I had a bowl of pickled carp, and I had a bowl of pickled herring, a good brand that you would be familiar with, side by side. And I told my guests, well, I got these two brands of pickled herring, and Pam and I don't agree on which one tastes best. Taste these and let me know which you'd like the most.
Oh,
and
boy.
Hands down.
Totally duped everybody.
The carp was more popular.
Hands down, really.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Some people weren't happy when I told them about that. But
well, I suspect that was some of the impetus for your first go-around in trying to raise some awareness of carp as edible, trying to get some restaurants to put it on the menu.
Yeah, it was a contest. We offered prizes of free advertising and publicity and so on to a restaurant that would serve the best carp dish. And there's a lot of good restaurants in our river towns here.
And we're talking the spans between the Twin Cities and the Quad Cities, right? I mean, it's not just La Crosse or Winona. You were looking
400 miles of the river, dozens of towns.
Lots of restaurants.
Lots of good restaurants.
Okay.
And we really beat the drum and publicized this. We had stories, actually, we had people from Radio Free China call me and interview me about this because people in China think it's so funny that people don't eat carp in this country. And for the first 2 years, we didn't have a single entry. There wasn't a single restaurant in that 400 miles of river that would serve carp. Then in the third year, we had two of them. One was the Bluegill Cafe in McGregor, which was a new restaurant at the time, and Mississippi's Bistro in Trempealeau, Wisconsin. I had the carp numerous times at both places, and it was very good, and other people that ate it enjoyed it. And both of those restaurants are out of business now.
Not related to the carp, though.
I hope not. I don't think so. Yeah. But I feel, I'm sure that eventually there'll be a lot of restaurants serving carp. I hear places in Chicago and other parts in the country. There's a place in Keokuk, Iowa, that served carp for years. There's a place in Omaha that's been in business since the 20s or 30s.
Wow, but they're few and far between.
Yeah, I mean, those are the only two places I know of that have been serving carp for a long time and are pretty popular restaurants, I guess.
So that brings us up to the here and now and your current contest, the current way of creating awareness is having people write poetry about it.
It's interesting because carp are a subject of art and poetry in Asia too, and people don't realize that. And when I first got the idea of the poetry contest, I, of course, Googled carp and poetry, which any modern person would want to do. And I found a beautiful poem by a Chinese woman, Yun Wang, who, besides being a poet, is an astrophysicist and cosmologist at the University of Oklahoma. And there is a tradition of carp and poetry. Besides that, this is a contemporary poem, but there are older ones. So we have prizes in three categories, which is free form, haiku, and limericks. You know, there once was a carp in lacrosse, that sort of thing.
Sure.
And the subjects, I kind of flipped through the, I didn't think it would be fair to read any of the entrants here for the radio because the contest is still going on. But there's a lot of use of the verb carping as to carp about something. There's a lot of attention to eating carp and a lot of things about whiskers, too, because they do have some distinctive whiskers.
Your intent for this is to just simply create awareness.
Yeah, I want people to think about it.
The good they might provide, but also the awareness of carp as a invasive problem. Be knowledgeable.
Well, I'd still like to see them eaten. I think they're a resource. It's unusual to have a resource that harvesting that resource creates a benefit. Usually you have to protect things or limit the harvest, whether it's trees or fish or birds or anything. And in the case with carp, if they're over-harvested, I think a lot of people would be happy about that.
We've mentioned a couple of times that carp have in the past been more available in fish markets especially. Where do we find it today?
There are still some commercial fishermen with stores. The one near here is Mike Valley has a store in Prairie du Chien, and he's a fisherman and does a good job of smoking carp. A lot of the major chain supermarkets have smoked carp if you look for it. I've bought it at Woodman's and some other stores. We just did something in the current Big River about some of the supermarket chains. Hy-Vee has a difficult time. They used to sell smoked carp and they stopped because that wasn't approved by groups that were approving the sustainability of fish harvests. And again, that's ironic because we want people to over-harvest carp, but because it wasn't certified, they can't sell it anymore. So that might be a problem with some stores, but it's still around.
Yeah.
And it's really sad that when we have such an abundance of a resource like that, that we don't eat it. You know, people have a lot of food prejudices, and it wasn't that long ago in this country that people didn't eat lobsters and shrimp. Because, and rightly so, they were considered to be a bug. They're much more closely related to insects and spiders than they are to fish. They are basically a bug. So it's just a matter of attitude and culture. And I wish my father were still around because I would like to sit down with the some crackers and some good smoked carp and have him enjoy it, because he's the guy that got me going on the wrong track with these carp.
Reggie McLeod tracks and reports on issues related to the Mississippi River and is publisher of the Winona, Minnesota-based Big River Magazine. You'll find links to the magazine, the current carp poetry contest, which has a submission deadline of May 1st, and Young Lang's poem, The Carp, all at our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. The winning entries in that carp poetry contest, by the way, will be published in the July-August issue of the magazine. If you missed part of today's show, you can also find the audio archives for this and other Newsmakers programs at wpr.org/newsmakers. Visit it often. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. Our production team includes Maureen McCollum, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. A reminder that for updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.